And in the studio today, I'm Doris and...
Simon.
Ben.
Albert.
So thanks for coming back. This is a good lesson, isn't it, Albert?
It is. I really feel like this is really critical, especially in June. You know, a lot of people are graduating from college. They're going to start acquiring wealth and getting out there in the job market. These are tips and things behind the scenes that they should know about.
Well, it's good for Ben to be here because he's also one of these millennial people who are just thinking about what he wants to do in life. What do you think of this article, Ben?
It's very helpful to know that actually 90% of people who start companies fail, but 10% don't fail. And I'm excited to learn what are the tips and tricks and how to be in the 10% that succeeds.
Well, and Simon, you have dealt with a lot of people in different businesses and young startups and people in your business world, in your life. What do you think of this article?
I think it's a good article, especially because it points out, like Ben was saying, some of the tips and things that are needed to be able to succeed in startups. And in particular yesterday, they were basically talking about a willingness to do all the different jobs at the company and hard work.
That's right. That was on page 34, if you happen to have the magazine. Today, we're going to be starting on page 35. But remember that it's good to have your own company, but only 10% are going to succeed. So don't feel too bad if you're to succeed. But I would say get a little experience before you get your own startup. Wouldn't you think so, Simon?
Yeah, it's true. Also, I think it's probably important to be prepared for the different realities of running a startup that they're pointing out in this article.
And that's what we're going to find out today, aren't we? So let's start on page 35 by reading the first paragraph about having the right attitude.
Have the right attitude. Be willing to pick up the phone and talk to customers, learn to code, or even take out the trash. There is no single job that is ever above or beneath you, said Ross Cohen, co-founder of the online background check platform BenVerified.com. Startups can't afford to segment responsibilities like traditional corporations. Even as they grow, employee roles and responsibilities will inevitably overlap. Founders should expect to be involved in all tasks, no matter how seemingly menial or mundane.
Well, there's some things that people think, when I'm the boss, I'm going to have secretaries do everything, and I'll just delegate what to do. But this article doesn't say that.
That's right. We talked yesterday, actually, they used a great word. We used the word glamorization. And in that word, we were basically talking about how people sometimes think a startup is going to be very different than it is. They think of it as being very glamorous or exciting and fancy. But then we learned that it was actually a lot of hard work. And they're sort of exploring that idea more here, aren't they, Ben?
They are. And if you have managed or succeeded in getting your startup off the ground, you have to keep it going. And to keep it going, often there's not enough people to do all the jobs. So you really have to work on a lot of different skills.
That's true. Well, I wonder here why they say you have to learn to code. What does that mean? Why do you have to learn to code? Does anybody know?
Well, usually in startups, we imagine like Silicon Valley or San Francisco, where there's a lot of software engineering. And to code means to design, write, or test and create computer codes for computer programs, such as like Facebook and Amazon. So it's just basically saying, hey, you know, no job is too small for you, even though you're the boss. I really like her subheading saying having the right attitude, because you may not be able to control everything in life, but if you're able to have a good attitude, you're able to react.
That's right. And it's interesting here how they list coding in with a bunch of really kind of things we might view as like normal or lower level tasks, like answering the phone and taking out the trash. And I think for people who aren't too familiar with computer science and things like that, this idea of being able to code might sound like a high-level task, but it's actually just kind of a lot of grunt work in a lot of these companies. It's very time-consuming, and you can outsource it to people in India fairly easily. So it's actually not a very pleasant job, I think, is what they're saying here. You have to be able to prepare yourself to do all of the jobs, no matter how unpleasant or...
But if I started the company and I'm the CEO, then that kind of job could be beneath me. Why should I do that kind of job? What does it say about that?
It says you shouldn't let anything be beneath you. When we say that beneath you, it means like referring to your dignity. You're not too important for anything. Yeah.
Yeah. They also say, though, that nothing is above you, which means you shouldn't be intimidated by some of the tasks that you normally would associate with people who are maybe higher up than you in a company. You have to be willing to make sort of big business decisions if it's your own business, and you can't just pass those off to other people.
Well, sometimes people like to segment or separate responsibilities, like traditional corporations. You're in charge of this, and you're in charge of that, and you don't overlap. You do your job and I do mine. But even as these little companies grow, they find out that they can't really work that way.
No, they have to do different jobs. And we like to use the term wear many different hats. So wearing a different hat would be something like my job is to write, but I also help to direct or do human relations in some way, and that would be two hats that I'm wearing.
You might have to answer the phone sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
So that's three hats.
And would you take out the garbage?
That's four hats.
Okay.
So they have to wear many different hats.
Right. As the company grows, then, the role of the people you hire, they will really, inevitably, that means for sure, they're going to overlap. You're going to say, I wasn't hired to do that. I was hired to be something or other, a coder. I wasn't hired to be a secretary, right?
That's right. And also, I guess, then importantly, founders or people who start the company, like their employees, should be prepared to be involved in all kinds of different tasks. And then they use a couple of really good words, menial or mundane.
Those are two good words, M words. What does menial actually mean?
Well, menial means like small, hands-on tasks, things that take time but don't take a lot of thought. Things
like taking out the garbage.
Yeah, maybe very repetitive kind of jobs.
Answering the phone.
Like that.
What is a mundane job? Sense?
Something that is dull, lacking interest. You know, the mundane, the boring stuff. It doesn't sound glamorous, but you have to do it anyways because it must be done.
What would be some kind of mundane job? I think sometimes clerks that work at the bank, they just keep cashing your checks and standing there.
Yes.
You know, or what other job could be a mundane
keeping
job?
Keeping track of receipts.
Right. Right.
Yeah, keeping track of numbers, writing a lot of codes, writing a lot of numbers, writing maybe copying for somebody else.
Sure. So it's not all glamorous work then. Okay. So nothing is beneath you. Don't say, I wasn't hired to do that. I'm a graduate of such and such a business school. Why am I doing that? Don't have that attitude. Your attitude is very important. Don't you think, Simon?
Yeah, I think that is true. Sure.
Okay, well, the next part talks about people might not want what you're offering, and that's a very important point. So let's read point number two today on page 35.
People might not want what you're offering. Fortune magazine reports that making a product no one wants was the top reason for startup failure. A 2014 survey of failed startups by CB Insights, an angel investor and venture capital database, found that 42% cited a lack of a market need for their product as the single biggest reason for their failure. If you're going to spend your time making a product, spend time making sure it's the right product for the right market. Business owners fall in love with their idea and don't spend enough time segmenting their market, said Spencer Smith of Spencer X. Smith Consulting.
Well, Fortune magazine often does a lot of surveys of businesses, and they have some very important tips here. I think the main reason for the failure is what we want to know, isn't it? What is it?
That's right. It says here that the main reason is because people are making products that nobody wants.
That's true. People do make things that nobody wants. So they say, why don't you buy this? And nobody buys it because they don't want to use it.
I feel like sometimes, you know, people get what we call tunnel vision, which is they can't see to the left or right of them. And, you know, we have these startup CEOs or founders so focused on one thing. We're like, oh, this is an amazing idea because I came up with it and everyone else is going to love it. But then, hey, it doesn't always happen that way.
Can you think of any examples of something like that?
No.
I mean, I think really you just need to go to sort of the bargain section of any major department store and you'll see all kinds of stuff. But I think the interesting thing about this is that we probably never see most of these products because they don't even make it into stores, right?
No, they don't. Yeah, I think a lot of these startups that did succeed were often based on a need. So a need to connect. Facebook was successful in that. Apple was successful because there's a need for technology that everyone could use in their home, and they did a really good job of that. So a lot of great successful startups, because there's a need for it, because there's a market for that product, they succeed.
Well, most of the products that really are successful today, I remember reading about the 3M company, how they put these little stickers and so forth, and there was a big need for that. And so once they made that, then people used it. But if you make something that nobody needs, they're not going to use it. So you have to think of what do people need that will make their life better, faster, easier, or more useful, then you might have a good product.
Right, and you know, in this paragraph right here, we're talking about how, hey, if you're going to spend time making your own product, you know, spend some time researching, doing research for the market, know your audience, know which market you're going to sell to. This way you have a better idea to know if your product is something that people will need, if it will be successful, and yeah, so this way you won't fail.
Yeah, I actually think the issue is probably fairly complicated, maybe even a little more complicated than people not needing the product. Because, you know, if somebody's inventing a product, they're going to show people the product and sort of people will be like, oh, that's great. You know, they'll get some feedback before they produce it. I think often, though, the issue is the price of the product compared to how much you need it.
And then if there's something like it already on the market that's similar, then you have to compete with that, too.
Yeah,
so I really like that, by the way. I remember hearing about it. Like, there is no such thing as a bad product. There's always such thing as a bad price for it.
Yeah. So if you think about, you know, I don't know, amazing clothes pegs that people use to hang their clothes or something, but if you're charging $20 each for them, you probably won't sell them, right?
There's the price, and then there's the usability and something new, the novelty, something new about it. So you have to really do some research. That's very important because lack of market need is the single biggest reason for failure. So is there a need for your idea? Do people want to do something that you have in mind? You know, I thought about maybe something like a Studio Classroom magazine. We could put something on it that makes it glow in the dark. So when you turn off the light, you can see it.
Hey.
Everybody said, that's not really a very good idea because people don't really want to do that. But, you know, I've got a lot of ideas, but they're not going to be very good if they don't market. See, I thought, well, something different, you know. But you've got to be sure there's a market. Who cares if they can find it in the dark, see?
I would like that feature.
Yeah. So your ideas aren't always that good. Right? But we have to think of different things, right?
We're coming back with the glow in the dark.
Yeah. Don't you think that's a good idea?
But, you know, 2016.
I don't know if we could sell more magazines for doing that, though, see? So that's why we didn't do it. That's one of those products that never went to the market.
Yeah, I think the need for finding some need in a market is a good argument for going and getting real work experience. I think that a lot of people can understand or find that that new market or that new need if they do a little bit of work inside of a market.
Yeah, and be involved in it and then see the response, right?
Oh, another thing is, like we mentioned before, getting experience. Another key part about, you know, getting experience is also networking. If you get out there and you work at different companies, you're able to meet more people, maybe collaborative.
Find out what they need, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So sure. It's not only that, but networking is really important as well.
I think it's also important to remember that as we talk about startups and entrepreneurship, we're not only talking about technology companies like Google or Facebook. We might be talking about somebody who's just copying an idea, like starting a drink stand, in a local night market or something. But even there, it's important to have sort of something that sets your business apart, whether it be like you are offering cheaper drinks than everyone else or better drinks than everyone else or a nicer atmosphere. But when people focus on just the idea of having their own sort of business instead of focusing on who they're going to sell their product to and how, they get into trouble.
That's true. Okay, well, let's read the second column of today's lesson on page 35. Finding a market. Let's find out what that means.
Find a niche market. You don't want to spend all that time and effort and build a company no one wants, said Mudit Rawat, founder and CEO of an on-demand grocery and goods delivery company. No answers to basic questions, such as what is the size of this market, who is the competition, etc. The more you research, the better your chances of solving the right problems. You can overcome it. Startup life might not be as glamorous as the media portrays it, but the many challenges faced by budding entrepreneurs are far from insurmountable and offer great rewards when successfully overcome.
This is a very important part right here. Simon, would you like to tackle this part?
Yeah, we're looking at the subtitle here. Find a niche market.
What a word. It must be French, right?
The reason I'm spelling this word is because we all say it differently, and sometimes you find this in English, different pronunciations from different people.
Even. How do you say it?
And I say niche, but Steve just read it as niche, and one of you just said it as niche?
I think niche.
I would say niche, like you.
Yeah, Ben and I are together on this.
Well, just know what it means anyway, even if you don't have to know. It means is finding a definite market that nobody else has, a very special market that nobody has, right?
Yeah, your own special place in the market. So the thing that you are better than all of the competitors at doing.
I wonder why English put so many French words into it. Yeah, we've got German words, Chinese words, all kinds of things in the English language. But this happens to be one of the French ones. Mm. And it's kind of hard to know how to pronounce those. And they might not pronounce them the same way in France as we do in America. Who knows?
No. Yeah, we can't speak French. We speak English.
Okay, but we have to read the French words. Okay.
Right, so finding a niche market is really important because in the previous paragraph we talked about attracting angel investors. And, you know, angel investors are known as the people who seed the first initial funding, you know, where they save you and they also give you a lot of money. So you want to be able to know your market and also be able to figure out, like, oh, what can we offer?
The other thing they say here is you don't want to spend all your time building a company that no one wants. And I think that that really is a key point here.
All your time and your money.
Yeah, you spend a lot of money, you spend a lot of time, you work really hard to build a company, and then it turns out,
So it says here that we should know the answers to the basic questions. What is the first thing that we need to know? And what is the first thing they mention here?
What is the size of your market? Is it big? Is it small?
Size is very important. Are you looking for a big market or a small market? Are you looking for people of a certain age or a certain what they like in their country, like Japanese or Chinese, or who are you looking for? You have to find out who the product is going for. Are you looking for people studying English or what?
Yeah. Are you want to sell to the entire world or just to your country, just to your city, or just to your friends?
So that's a very basic question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That's right.
That's very important. But what is the second question then?
The second one is, who is your competitor? What is your competition doing? What are they offering currently, you know, right now? What can you offer that's different or better?
Okay, so if someone is already doing that, then Simon, why would you also start that same business? Because you think it's successful? Or because, what would be the reason for you starting one when there's a lot of competition, really?
Well, I think actually that's a really common thing, isn't it? We tend to see market trends kind of go in surges where, you know, we open a donut store and then everybody has a donut store. You open a coffee shop, everybody has a coffee shop, that sort of thing. And I think basically the reason people do that, they copy other ideas or they work from other ideas, is that they think they have some unique thing they can add to it. And that's what we're talking about here. They think they have a special niche that they can meet.
Right. And they've done that in a lot of the food places. And for instance, people like to go to McDonald's because the kids have a place to play or something, where they make a character like, you know, what's his name, McDonald?
Ronald McDonald.
Right,
the clown.
And they make some things, there's so many hamburger places, but, you know, make yours a special kind of place. And that's the way they get the people to come to them. And the more you research, the better your chances are of solving the right problems. So research is very important, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, and you need to figure it out probably before you start your business and while you're starting your business and after you've started your business.
Keep on
continue
researching.
That's
true. Isn't that important?
It is important, especially because I think one of the things they don't mention in this article is that most people who are pretty serious about starting a business will first work out a business plan. And in the business plan, one of the things you try to do is identify different problems and then explain how you plan to solve them. But here they say the better your chances of solving the right problems. And so if you do enough research, you might correctly identify the problems you're going to face and have a plan for dealing with them before you start.
So what are some of the problems? Competition is one. And how much it costs, whether people will pay that much money to do that service, right?
Yeah.
For instance, some people want to start a company to go to the moon, but it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, so most people aren't going to want to do it. So you have to try to find out what you're going to do. Is it too expensive for people? Are they going to want to do it enough to pay for it if you do the program? Don't start
right.
going to the moon program, Simon.
Oh, I won't
I think
do
there
it.
Are some out there, but they're too expensive.
I think they're aiming even higher. There are companies that want to go to Mars.
Right, wherever you want to go. But you remember that you have to find out why people want to buy your product, how they're going to use it, and is it something that is affordable for them? That's very important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Is it something you can give them at that price? Is it something you can afford to give? Costs of production are important, too.
So after reading this, you might say, oh, it's really hard. I wonder if we can do it. However, if you really feel that you have something you want to offer the world and you want to start it, you can overcome it. That's what our last paragraph says. You can overcome it.
Yeah, that's right. It says startup life might not be as glamorous as the media portrays it. And we're back to that word glamorous again, meaning that startup life isn't as easy as sometimes media makes it look.
Right. They do. Makes it look really good. Start up your own company and you can have stocks, people will buy them, and you know, you're set up for life. It sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But it may not be that good because of these many challenges. Now, the challenges that are faced by budding entrepreneurs. Who are budding entrepreneurs?
Budding entrepreneurs are usually people who are starting off. They're new. When I hear the word budding, I imagine a plant that's breaking out of the soil and ready to grow into a big tree.
Budding.
That's right. So budding entrepreneurs are young people who are just starting to grow into entrepreneurs.
Okay. So these kind of challenges doesn't mean that you can't overcome them. And the word that we use here for we can overcome them, what word do we use?
Insurmountable.
They're not insurmountable. You can make them work, right?
That's right. So they use this word insurmountable, which means you can't get over the problem. But they are saying these problems are far from insurmountable, which means they're a long way from being problems that can't be solved. In other words, they're problems that can easily be dealt with. Maybe not easily, but they can be dealt with.
And so they do offer great rewards when successfully overcome. And we've seen that by a lot of the businesses today. They can be successful. So don't start out with the idea that you're not going to succeed. That would be against you, wouldn't it?
That's right. It's interesting here. We've talked a lot about the number of companies that are not successful, and we've also talked a lot about the importance of finding a niche and doing research. And I kind of wonder here, how many of the companies that aren't successful because they didn't do, sort of diligent research and planning?
Well, the market does change sometimes, too, because of the economy. When it's better, people will spend more money on luxury goods, but when it isn't, they'll get essential. So you have to look at the time, Jeremy.
But it would be interesting to know sort of what the odds are for well-prepared entrepreneurs as opposed to people who just, want to make new clothes pegs that are
right.
$20 each or something, right?
So there's no right or wrong in starting your own company or working for an established one. Just know what you want to do and try to make a difference in the world and have the right attitude. That's very important.
Be prepared. Be humble.
So thanks for being with us and joining the panel. And we hope that you've enjoyed this lesson. If you're a millennial or not a millennial, it's a very good lesson for vocabulary. And it's good to know that our attitude is important in whatever job we do, isn't it?
That's right.
So stay tuned tomorrow for a new lesson. And thanks for being with us for this one. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Goodbye.